Hi there, Jonathan here. The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website where you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. That's at www.jonathanfaust.com. Thank you and enjoy. Tonight's talk is on the ninth of the 10 perfections. And this one is on metta, or cultivating friendliness, or cultivating loving kindness is a word that's thrown around a lot. And I wanted to start by telling a little story. This was from a retreat that Sharon Salzberg was leading in New York City. There are trainings we can do that help to help you focus your awareness and your attention. But there are also trainings of the heart, of learning how to look for the good, how to cultivate friendliness, how to forgive, etc., etc. So on this particular retreat, one of the exercises was to do walking meditation outside. This is in New York City. And as you're walking outside, to generate thoughts of friendliness and kindness towards someone. And across from where the meditation center was a subway platform. And so one of the women reported kind of going, just doing her walking meditation, and it's all very, very internal. And she sort of selected someone as a young man who was, you know, wearing a, you know, his business attire and his trench coat and so forth, and was just wishing him well. And we'll explore some of the phrases, but, you know, may you feel happy. You know, may you feel safe from inner and outer harm. And just select this guy at random from this crowd. So she was doing this for a little while. And then this young man walked over to her, and he said, "Please don't think I'm crazy. Please don't think I'm strange, but for some reason, there's something in me asking you to pray for me. I'm going through a very difficult time right now, and you just seem like the kind of person who could be supportive." That give you goosebumps? That's just a little taste of the power of cultivating friendliness, cultivating kindness, and being a well-wisher of others. So I've reviewed kind of the 10 perfections with each talk, and I always preface it by saying how much I dislike the term the 10 perfections, because it implies that you're not perfect until you perfect these things. It's just one more self-improvement technique. It's kind of like the Ten Commandments, which in this culture are sort of framed as thou shalt not. They're the rules of the things you shouldn't do. But there's another angle, which is very much sort of the, you know, from the Asian point of view, is that, well, those, the ethical behavior outlined in the Ten Commandments are really just a description of an awakened person. You know, an awakened, alive person does not harm. You know, an awakened and alive person does not steal. So they're more of a description of an awake being. And these are interesting elements to look at, because they're sort of facets of how we show up in the world, and they become a very interesting way to reflect. And what qualities could I cultivate in these perfections? So this time, I'm going to kind of review them, but talk a little bit about what it's not. There's always a quality of letting go. So for the first of these qualities is generosity, of cultivating a generous heart. And for many people, that's something we can relate to. Okay, yeah, it would be good for me to be more generous. But to be more generous, you've got to let go of something. You have to let go of greed. You have to let go of craving. And you have to let go of attachment. But the really cool thing is when you let go of desire, something very powerful occurs inside. There's a sense of well-being. There's a sense of presence. And a natural quality of generosity can flow from that. One of my meditation partners feels that enlightenment, if you will, is simply the absence of desire. When you think about that, if you're not desiring anything right now, there's an incredible richness and fullness that enters into the moment. So what follows generosity is ethical integrity. And that simply means letting go of unskillful behavior in your relationships. It really means becoming a proponent for others and their well-being. The next is a reference to renunciation, which is just letting go of the attachment to sense pleasures. And that doesn't mean you let go of sense pleasures. You just let go of the attachment to them. We could spend the next year talking about that one, but there's a lot in there. When you do that, when you start to let go of what you don't need, part of renunciation is also looking at all the excess you have, so you're living simply. And natural arising from there is wisdom. And wisdom is simply your capacity to see what's true, to see through the stories and the delusions and the confusion, to come in contact with the laws of reality, if you will. As you start to see into the nature of reality, the next quality is one to enhance, and this is called wise effort. Taking wisdom and then applying it in your life. Assessing where you're unskillful in life, where your actions in life are informed by what classical Buddhism calls the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. So this requires real clear assessment. How is your behavior in some way informed by greed, by wanting? How is your behavior informed by ill will and judgment and blame? How much is your behavior informed by things that you believe are true that may not be true? So as you set off to assess your life, you also need the next quality, which is patience. And that's the capacity to stay with the difficulties. If you want to be free in your life, you have to come in contact with everything that isn't free to see it clearly, and that requires patience. That also requires the next quality, which is truthfulness. And a lot of this has to do about your speech, about how you interact with others, about letting go of unskillful speech, anything that perpetuates suffering. The eighth is resolve or determination, which is to develop the strength to stay with your practice. If you have an intention to be more awake, if you have an intention to have an unfettered heart, you have to let go of fear and you have to let go of doubt. And that leads us to loving kindness. And that is about living your life in a way that it is a benefit to others, which is a letting go of selfishness. So there are four questions I'd like to talk about in the next 29 minutes. What is life like without loving kindness? How do you develop loving kindness? How do you express it in the world? And what happens when you become more adept at it, when you really take it on as a path? So I think we know what it's like without it, but just to review it, a good friend of mine went off to a meditation retreat where in silence you find that your thoughts get really amplified, or your awareness of the thoughts get very amplified. And so the first day he noticed how he was just so filled with judgment. Someone walked by, and it's all in silence, and he goes, "Nice haircut, buddy." You know, and someone else, like, "Where'd you get those pants?" I'm quoting him here. It's, you know. And just seeing someone and like, what are you doing here? Just this judgment. But then as soon as he realized that, he was just horrified. And he thought, is this what I do all the time? Am I looking through this lens of just judging everyone and everything? And he realized, yeah, that's what he does. Have you ever looked in the mirror and been critical of what you see? Or rather, have you looked in the mirror and not been critical of what you see? Have you ever looked in the mirror and thought, oh my God, you look amazing? It gives you a little taste of the judgment we hold toward ourselves. I know when I look in the mirror, I will find one or two or three things that just aren't good enough and need some serious improvement. You know? I think it's safe to say that everyone in here at some time has felt judged or unsupported by your parents or your caretakers or your family. I would imagine all of us at some point have withheld praise toward another person, or maybe even been secretly pleased at someone else's struggles, a rival's struggles. Schadenfreude is quite a common experience that we have. So the absence of friendliness is being caught in judgment. And there's an interesting study that was done on relationships. Like, what are the signs that a relationship cannot be saved? And it was a pretty extensive study. And what they said is that the one word, if you're struggling in a relationship or you know someone who is, the one word where a relationship can probably not be saved is contempt. That when you hold the other person in contempt, it may be over. And it's very easy to see in our political culture right now the contempt that's out there. So our culture and our lives are infused with judgment. Either we're aware of it or probably not aware of it. And the judgment we have is toward others, but absolutely toward ourselves. How do we heal that? That becomes the question. So imagine a practice that gave you these benefits. This is from the sutras from the Buddhist time. If you practice loving kindness meditation, it's quite an ad. I think you'll appreciate it. You will sleep easily. You will wake easily. You will have pleasant dreams. People will love you. Animals will love you. The gods will protect you, whatever that means. External dangers such as poisons, weapons, and fire will not harm you. Your face will be radiant. Your mind will be serene. You will die unconfused. Anyone interested? If that isn't the sell, I don't know what is. But actually, if you think about the times in your life, maybe you've had some times in your life when your heart simply felt full, when you were filled with gratitude and with appreciation. Chances are you might have been sleeping easily and waking easily, having nice dreams, feeling that people loved you, animals love you, feeling radiant and feeling serene. We intuitively know that those qualities of life are possible because we've experienced them, maybe in fleeting moments. But the question then becomes, well, then how do you develop this? How do you develop this capacity for friendliness toward yourself and toward others? And it's a training. It really is. So a little bit about the origins of the practice. Back when the Buddha was teaching, they would have monsoons and rainy seasons. So for about 3 months of the year, because it was too wet to go anywhere, all the monks would come and practice together very intensively with instruction from the Buddha. And then when the monsoons came to an end, they were all instructed to go out and to practice and to serve and to teach in different communities. So the story goes, you know, all this is, who knows how much is real or how much is myth, but the story goes that they selected one place where they're all going to meet, and a lot of the local villagers were very pleased to kind of support the community. But as they were sort of filling in the forests, the spirits in the forest were not happy. They felt they were just invaded, and so the spirits of the forest were just generating horrible stuff, you know, sounds and images, and it frightened the monks. And the monks went to the Buddha and they said, "We're just freaked out in the woods. It's not a happy place." And so the Buddha said, he said, "You know, I sent you there unarmed. So now I'm going to send you armed." And armed is with a practice. And he gave them the practice of metta. The word metta, M-E-T-T-A, is akin to the word mita, M-I-T-A, which means friend or friendliness. The word mita also means sun. And you can think of it as when the sun is not obscured by clouds, it just shines. It shines in all directions without discrimination. And so the Buddha gave them a practice of generating friendly thoughts, you know, toward self and toward others. So there are many different ways to practice metta, but I'd like to share with you the translation from what the Buddha offered at that time. So if you'd like, you can close your eyes, and you can sort of take these words in, and this is a direct translation from the Metta Sutta. I'll read this relatively slowly, so I'll read a line and kind of give you a moment just to kind of reflect on it. You might sense it either as a suggestion or an instruction or just something to contemplate. May all beings be happy and secure. May all beings be happy-minded. Whatever living beings there are, feeble or strong, long, stout, or medium, short, small, or large, seen or unseen, those dwelling far or those dwelling near, those who are born or those who await birth, may all beings, without exception, be happy. Let no one deceive another or despise any person, whatever in any place. Let no one wish suffering to another. Just as a mother would protect her only child at the risk of her own life, even so, let us cultivate a boundless heart toward all beings. Let your thoughts of boundless loving kindness pervade the whole world, above, below, and across, without obstruction, without hatred, without enmity. This is divine abiding here. So if you like, you can let your eyes open. So these were the instructions that were given to the monks in the Buddha's day. So the practice was not just to be aware of sensation and to be the objective witness. It was also about generating these qualities of loving kindness, to look for the good, to wish all beings in all dimensions well. And it's said that when the monks took that practice and went back into the woods, that everything changed. That everything became kind of suffused with a sense of harmony. This practice is pretty simple, really. The challenge is to keep it alive. Just as when you're practicing kind of a sense-based moment-to-moment awareness, you see how quickly the mind is distracted. And you, again, return back and you get more and more present over time. In that same way, when you have an intention to experience the unlimited heart, that practice will bring you right up against your fear, your doubt, all of your undigested stuff. That's what the practice does. But the last line is an important one, where he said, this is divine abiding here. So this divine abiding is a very important part of metta and the cultivation of the heart. And this is in reference to what are called the four immeasurables, that there are four states of your heart when fully expressed are absolutely immeasurable and unlimited. The first is the experience of kindness. And that kindness goes in two directions. There's kindness towards self and kindness toward other. So when you take that sense, as the sutta says, when you take that stance of a mother who would do anything to protect her child, when you offer that to yourself, that's pretty transformative juice. When you offer that to others, it's quite powerful. So the first is kindness. The second is compassion. And compassion is the capacity to feel. Compassion toward yourself. Compassion toward others. The third is joy. So the first time I heard that, I thought, well, that just seems too happy. That seems too good. Really? Joy? And again, joy is that upwelling, the upwelling inside. And the really interesting thing is that it's not just your joy, but it's cultivating sympathetic joy, to take joy at other people's joy. It's like when you've got a child or a niece or a nephew who's really successful at something, and your heart just expands at their success. Cultivating that. And the fourth is equanimity, which is a quality of steadiness and a quality of serenity, no matter what's changing. And I actually will be talking more about that next week. So the question becomes, how do you express this? How do you embrace it more? I was just leading an intensive training for yoga teachers getting their advanced professional degree in teaching meditation, and spoke with one of the people in this program, and he was telling me how he had been living in California, kind of doing his life, and his grandfather was coming toward the end of his life, and he said that he was so grateful for what his grandfather had given him that he just felt he needed to come back and support his grandfather through his transition. So he dropped everything and he moved back and saw his grandfather many times a week. And he said it was a transformative process to go and hang out with his grandfather and to see sickness, old age, and death, and to support him. He said it just matured him so much to go through that journey with his grandfather. After his grandfather passed, if I have the story straight, that they did some DNA testing in their family. You know how you can get your DNA checked? And they realized that his grandfather, there was no DNA connection. His grandfather was not his blood grandfather. And some of the people were very upset about that. But for him, it made no difference because the love was so strong and such a transformative agent. There's a story that comes from yoga philosophy of a student who wanted to study with a master, and the master sent him away. But he was so desiring to study with this master that he created a sculpture of him and had it in the woods and would go and offer his ablutions and so forth. And at one point, this master saw the sculpture he had made and saw the purity in this man's eyes, and spoke that it does not matter what the object of your affection is. It's that practice of opening your heart again and again and again that is so deeply, deeply transformative. And when it comes to being with others in their struggles, it can be very challenging. If you've ever lost someone, if you ever had someone close to you who's died, maybe you've noticed that what people tend to say doesn't quite resonate. When people actually, at least I've noticed this, when someone close dies, when people hear and then they'll speak, they're usually saying something that makes them feel better. You know, either like, well, I'm sure your father's in heaven looking down on you right now. You know, or, oh, I know how you feel. When my mother died, this is what I did. Or, oh, well, she's in a better place, that sort of thing. The best response that I've ever gotten when I've experienced loss is someone simply saying, I'm sorry for your suffering. And I try to remember that when I am around others in their suffering. So developing loving kindness is also developing empathy, to sense the unmet need of others in your life, to imagine their point of view. It's your capacity to do a role reversal, to open your heart to really sense or imagine what another person is feeling. And the practice is how to live from this space. So there's something that I do occasionally when I remember, which is not that often. I've mentioned this before, and it's called stealth metta, where you kind of take on the practice of well-wishing, but you do it in a public place. So when I'm in Safeway, I will sometimes just offer stealth metta. And that is as I'm pushing my cart around to just wish people well. And it's a fascinating experience. And again, it's not overt, you know. It's not like tapping people on the shoulder and giving them hugs or anything like that. It's just sensing the goodness in people and just wishing them well. And it's always been interesting because every now and then, someone will just stop and turn and smile. So it's a fun practice if you want to try that on. And it has to be balanced. I was once leading a retreat. This was at Kripalu Center. And someone found it so powerful. You know, just the, you know, making eye contact with so many people and speaking really truthfully. He said, boy, there's something about just really making eye contact with people that is so powerful. He said, and then he left the retreat. You know, he said, I'm going to do this more. So when he went home to Queens, he reported back to me that practicing that on the subway was not really helpful. He said at least a lot of strange people came up. So, oh, you're one of the crew. So you have to balance it. But there's something about taking the stance of being a well-wisher of all. This last month, I was leading two retreats at Kripalu Center in Western Massachusetts, and I lived there for 24 years and led lots of retreats over those 24 years and, you know, led the organization for a while. And there are probably about 400 guests at one time. And because so many years and so many people have kind of come through, that there are a lot of people who I may have led a retreat for who I may not remember or they've changed. And so I've always had this terrifying thing when someone will just come up to me and say, you remember me, don't you? And I've learned to say, refresh my memory. When was that? And then they'll tell me. When people say, like, do you remember what you told me? I'll say, when was that? Like, it was April of 1987. So I have this default whenever I'm walking around, and Kripalu Center is an old Jesuit seminary with five floors. It's 5 acres in one building. So it's this huge place. So my default is just to smile and wave to everybody. Just blanket coverage, you know. Hey, how are you doing? Nice to see you. Good to see you again. But actually, the result of it is, like, it really kind of pumps me up. It really feels good. Part of it is self-protective, but another part is actually kind of taking that stance of being a well-wisher. So when you cultivate friendliness, you have to start with the hardest place, which is yourself. And again, we have this tendency to hold ourselves with so much judgment. It's very much a part of our culture. You know, we're a competitive culture. We're constantly comparing ourselves to others. So the classic instruction is to start with self. But I actually find it's a little bit easier to start by reflecting on a benefactor. And the benefactor is someone who you know wishes you well. The other alternative is to start with a dog or a cat. And that's a pretty good place to start. But I have been in some intensive retreats where there are some people who really have trouble finding anything that they connect with a sense of friendliness or compassion or kindness. I've shared the story before of an older man who was estranged from his kids. He'd been divorced. And when it came to the metta practice, he couldn't get it going. And he met with one of the leaders, and they did this whole life assessment, just scanning everything in his life. And what he got to was when he was a kid, there was a dog on his block that he kind of liked. That was it. That was his touchstone for connection. So that's where he had to start. And again, for each of us, or when you're doing your own metta practice, it's very helpful to start with someone easy. You know, it may be an ancestor, or it may be a friend, you know, someone who laughs at your jokes, you know, who gets you. And you begin by wishing that person well, because it's a little bit easier. And then to reflect on self. And the classic instructions are, then you reflect on a neutral person, just someone with whom you have no particular attraction or aversion, as a practice. And then kind of the final stage is where you can actually reflect on someone who's difficult. This is the difficult person. And it's usually best to get a little momentum going first. You know, start where it's easy. Start with self. Spread it out to a neutral person. And then you can begin to reflect on those who are a little bit harder to work with. I'd shared the story when I was on a month-long retreat, and we were doing this training, and on the third week, we were choosing the neutral person. And so we were told, just choose anyone you don't have a charge against, but no charge for. So I selected the retreat manager, who seemed like a fine person, but utterly unremarkable in my eyes. So my practice every day was on her. You know, may you feel happy, may you feel peace, may you feel safe from inner and outer harm, may you feel free. Just this offering to her. And about the third or fourth day of that week, she walked into the room, and like my heart soared. It was like, my beloved has just arrived. I was, oh my God, I'm falling in love with the retreat manager. Yeah. But again, it's where the attention goes, the energy flows. If you take a little bit of time to reflect on those who you know love you, and to wish them well, you will find the energy will flow in that direction. If you take time to really wish yourself well, over time, things begin to flow in that direction. So we're going to close with a little metta meditation. There's one of my favorite poems is a little bit kind of builds on this metaphor of looking at yourself in the mirror. Again, when most of us look in the mirror, there's something that doesn't match with where we want it to be. So this is one of my favorite poems from Derek Wolcott. And this really speaks to kind of the flowering of practice and the natural awakening of the heart. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread. Give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another who knows your heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit, feast on your life. So you might take a few moments to reflect on someone that you know cares for you. And you might visualize that person, or imagine that person, or feel what it's like to think of that person. and in your own way to wish them well. May you feel happy as I wish to feel happy. May you feel safe from inner and outer harm as I wish to feel safe. May you feel free from suffering as I wish to feel free. I'm taking a moment to offer this to yourself, and only if it feels right for you, you might just lightly bring your hand to your heart, reflecting on the following words. May I feel happy. May I feel peace. May I feel safe from inner and outer harm. May I feel free from suffering. And you might now, in the next few minutes, offer this out to those who come into your mind. Just letting faces or words arise. Particularly if there's anyone that may be struggling that you know of in your life. And you might now imagine this like a sun, the light flowing in all directions to all beings without discrimination. Just as a mother would protect her only child at the risk of her own life, let us cultivate a boundless heart toward all beings. Let these thoughts of boundless kindness pervade the whole world, above, below, and across, without obstruction. And in these final moments, you might just sense if you could offer this sense of love, of friendliness, out in all directions, and simultaneously offer it to yourself, to each cell of your body, and to this breath. And deepening your breath. When you're ready, you can let your eyes open. With a lot of the studies on happiness, they've found that most people have a happiness set point. That you only allow yourself to be so happy. And my sense is that the more you practice, the more you remember this sense of friendliness toward self and toward other, I believe that that is a dramatic way to ratchet up your capacity for happiness. When your heart feels more full, you inevitably become more pervaded with those immeasurable states of kindness, compassion, joy, and steadiness. So thank you for your kind and friendly attention. If you're doing stealth metta out there, let me know how it goes. A few announcements before we close. I'm going to be leading a retreat, a day-long retreat, here, August 12th, Saturday. And it's called The Questions That Can Change Your Life. So if you don't come, your life's still going to change. But these questions might enhance it. It's about the practice of inquiry. So I'll send more information out. But it's a really, really wonderful retreat. There's a discussion group. Ray will be anchoring the discussion group over here, which is just a really great way to connect with cool people. Also, a reminder that there's a yoga class beforehand. And both the yoga class and this class, as you may well know, are offered freely. And your support goes to the church and to IMCW and to support the teachers in our work. So thank you so much for that. So here's to increasing your happiness set point. Great to be with you. And I'll be back next week, and we're going to explore the 10th of the 10 perfections. Enjoy your night. Thank you.